Welcome to The Contemplative Life. Three pastors, friends, and spiritual companions help us explore spirituality through a contemplative lens.
I'm Christina Roberts.
I'm Chris Roberts.
I'm Christina Kaiser. We're glad you joined us.
Hello, everyone. It's great to be with you. Today, we are welcoming Dr. Jeanette Banaschak to the podcast. Jeanette is a spiritual director, an educator, and the co-founder of the Spiritual Guidance Training Institute, which offers certification in spiritual guidance with an interfaith, interspiritual emphasis. And most recently, SGTI began offering certification in outdoor companionship, for which the first cohort is going to begin here in early March. So Jeanette, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much. It's an honor to be invited to this.
So Jeanette, we'd love to hear more about outdoor companionship. A quick trip to the website tells us that outdoor companionship includes elements of multiple things like forest bathing, deep listening, mindfulness, community building. So I'd love it if you could say more about all of that. What do we mean by outdoor companionship?
Yeah, thanks for the question and getting started with definitions and what we're talking about with this term. Outdoor companionship, really, I don't even know how to describe the beginnings of it because in some ways, it's my life's work and my life's vocation. I'm calling it a love project because it really brings together a bunch of different areas of my life and training and teaching. And it's situated under the Spiritual Guidance Training Institute as a way to encourage individuals who are practicing as spiritual companions, spiritual directors, spiritual guides, and also other individuals who might be interested in the training because they're in medicine or they're like in some kind of healthcare, for example, or they're teachers or any number of service professions. Also interested in breaking down the silos around nature and the natural world and eco-justice within the environment, because people are doing their things that they're tasked with, and there's not a whole lot of overlap of individuals who are working within the different disciplines. And for me, I see this as a calling, really, as a vocation, as I mentioned previously, as a way to offer back, as a way to reciprocate using some of my gifts, building communities together and connecting communities as well. As far as what is going to happen, it's an online training program and it provides what people might need to integrate the natural environment in work, in service, in play. If people want to grow in their own practices, it's for you, but it's also for people who want to guide others as well. And so there's this kind of intuitive, embodied awareness of every proximate and dist being that we're going to really center in our training. And there's going to be a whole lot of outdoor time.
Jeanette, as I'm listening to you, I think I'm hearing themes of making this accessible for more people. And what did that mean? And before we started recording, you shared that you're from Chicago recording this, and even the fact that this is online. So this isn't something where we have to now go to the deep woods of the Northwest and camp out there for months. And so I'm curious if you could speak a little bit more to outdoor companionship being a wider lens than just maybe what we, in my mind, at least when I think about that, I have a certain image that I don't think is what you're talking about. And that I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah, thanks for that question. Outdoor companionship in Chicago, when we're not calling it forest bathing, though I do guide people in Chicago and call it, that is a term that people are knowing more and more. It was coined in 1982 in Japan. It made its way into the West. Well, it was coined as Shinrin-yoku. And it made its way here. And I realized I'm from the suburbs of Chicago, ages 6 to 18. And in the suburbs of Chicago, we're known for our forest preserves. And I found that as I was growing up, every waking moment, I wanted to be outside or in the forest preserve. And there are bike lanes and walking lanes and running lanes and some off pavement trails as well to explore. And that was where I found so much joy. I was that high schooler that had posters of waterfalls in my bedroom rather than the hottest musicians of the 80s and the 90s. And so I moved to Michigan and I was there for 18 years. I moved for the trees. I used to work at a camp when I was in college in Michigan. And as I was thinking about my first profession, I was like, what would be a nice medium place between the new friends that I have in Michigan and my family in Chicago and Chicagoland? So I found myself in Michigan for the trees. But I came back to Chicago almost 8 years ago, and I learned some things pretty quickly about the city and its inequities, especially around the natural environment. So I'll just give a couple of examples, and these have been explored by other people and other disciplines. And I feel like I'm a little bit late into knowing some of this. And so one of them is that the Tree Equity Index, that is an index that describes the tree canopy in an area. And when you look it up in Chicago, you find that the difference between, for example, neighborhoods on the south side versus neighborhoods on the north side or the west side is somewhere between the index, like the numbers are between 43 and 100. And so we think about the lack of accessibility of green space, of tree canopy, also of parks for some people in different parts of the city, specifically on the south side and the west side. And so that's one thing that I am really interested in exploring and working together around eco-justice. And another is that on the south side, the parks have cameras. Some of the parks have cameras in them. And so anybody who wants to enjoy the green spaces, which Chicago is quote unquote known for its green spaces, especially along the lakefront, that on the south side, people are policed for being in, when they're in nature. And on the north side, they're not. So these are a couple of inequities around trees, the amount of tree canopy, as well as who's policed when they're outside. And so one of the foundations of outdoor companionship is around what we would call it at the Spiritual Guidance Training Institute, compassionate sacred activism. Here, maybe it would be compassionate sacred eco-activism. And I just find myself in this moment meeting people and intersecting with others and want to see what part I can play and what we can co-create together here in this city. So other people in other cities are interested in this program because they also don't have forests right next door, though the training is for people who live in urban, suburban, or rural settings.
Thank you for, I'm sure it's a brief description of some of the ways that you are at work in the world and the things that you're a part of. And thinking about outdoor companionship, I myself was trained as a spiritual director by the Franciscans.
Yeah.
It's Brother Sun and Sister Moon, and the relationship that we have to the outdoors and the gratitude was very evident in my training. But maybe you could tell us a little bit about outdoor companionship and this building relationships and reciprocity with the more than human world. And maybe you can say a little bit more about what it looks like to build that relationship.
Yeah, thank you for that question. I was trained by Dominicans in a contemplative environment in Michigan. David Abrams came up with the concept more than human world. So I want to name that. And my understanding and practice of reciprocity is really inspired by indigenous paradigms. And I don't want to place all indigenous paradigms into one bucket. So I'll name a couple of different influences: Robin Wall Kimmerer and Tokopah Turner. And I'll say a little bit about them in a minute, but also influenced by the way children are already naturally in nature. So I want to tell a story about an experience that I had with my nibblings, my nieces and nephews, when I took them forest bathing several years ago. And I took them forest bathing as I was training. I was in this sort of practicum and I had invited them. We do a siblings camping trip every year. So we've done 19 siblings camping trips up to now. And And so lots of littles around. Everybody brings their partners and friends and lovers and kids. And so I invited the nibblings to forest bathe. And so we just were able to walk from our campsite through these evergreens. And I noticed one of my nieces, who at the time was 5, I noticed that she would wander off a couple of feet and just linger around some trees. I just thought, this is strange. And I didn't really want to, it wasn't strange. It was just, I'm noticing this. I'm witnessing this. And so then we'd walk a little further and I'd invite her back onto the path and she'd stray off the path and find another tree. And I just thought, this is really interesting. So we made our way to this one tree after we had walked through this kind of path of evergreens on both sides. And I said, let's hang out here for a little bit. And so this is getting to the question of relationship, inspired very much by Robin Wall Kimmerer, who talks about asking permission of the natural environment to build a relationship. So I just said to these littles, I said, let's see if they want us to build a relationship, to make an acquaintance with them. So let's ask permission before we even hug or touch or climb. Let's ask permission. And so we did in our own way. It was quiet. And this was, I'll say, the ages of children were like 4 to 7 at the time. And so after a little bit of time, I said, what do we think? What did we hear? And my nephew, who's 7 at the time, said, the tree said, yeah, we can engage. And so he proceeded to just climb the tree up. He was halfway up before I could even acknowledge his skills. And then another one of my nieces, the one who was lingering by the trees, went straight up to the tree and hugged it, or and hugged her. Kimmerer talks about the animacy of earth others. And so she was hugging this tree. And I couldn't help but think, she's hugging that tree much more than she's ever hugged me. And I know that she loves me and she loves my partner. She loves her parents and her family. And so we had this whole experience and we were hanging out at this tree. We were noticing what we were noticing, building a relationship with the tree. And I just asked her, I said, hey, I noticed something about your experience with building a relationship with that tree. Did you really enjoy hugging the tree? She said, oh yeah. Like, duh. Yeah, of course I did. And she's, and I said, I took a risk asking this question, but I asked, do you prefer hugging trees over humans? And she said, oh yeah, I prefer hugging trees over humans. And that was that. And it was like, okay, so this little one has just an intuitive understanding and awareness of building relationship with trees, that trying to see the natural world through their lens, especially like children 7 and under, who just have so much curiosity. They want to build a relationship with this blade of grass and this small purple flower and this rock. And in some ways, that's what I take my training from, following their lead in the ways that they are connecting. And Robin Wall Kimmerer tells the story in Braiding Sweetgrass, where she takes her students and asks a question of them about how can we reciprocate? We've had this beautiful experience out in nature. And this is a similar question that I'll ask at the end of an outdoor companionship experience, at the end of a forest bathing experience. What might we give back? How might we reciprocate? We've been given so much. And she asks her students, and they come up with this variety of creative ideas about what they might want to give back. I wanted to quote something that Tokopah Turner says in her book, Belonging, about reciprocity. She says, as we apprentice ourselves to the way of nature, we begin to understand that all of life is in a continuous cycle of giving and receiving. It's the honoring of this cycle that makes us feel at home in ourselves and in relation to the rest of nature. In order to experience true belonging, we must not only acknowledge the gifts we are receiving, but also give our beauty away, no matter how it may be received by others. And similarly, Kimmerer asks, what do you love too much to lose? Use your gifts. Find that and go do it.
Thank you so much for both of those quotes, Jeanette. And I love that story about how the kids are interacting because we sometimes learn through observation even, right? And through those who maybe have less walls up than ourselves. And so thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
It leads me to thinking a little bit about the community building aspect of outdoor companionship. We've talked about people quite a bit, even as we're talking about building that relationship with the more than human world. And maybe that's surprising on one hand, because sometimes when we think about going out in nature, we might think about just the walk on the trail or just sitting by the tree. But what about the community? How does that work?
All right, here I want to bring in the concept of interbeing from Thich Nhat Hanh. He'll talk about he discussed everything relying on everything else and said, we do not exist independently. We inter are. So he wrote this. There's a biologist named Lewis Thomas, whose work I appreciate very much. He describes how our human bodies are, quote, shared, rented, and occupied by countless other tiny organisms without whom we couldn't move a muscle, drum a finger, or think a thought. Our body is a community, and the trillions of non-human cells in our body are even more numerous than the human cells. Without them, we could not be in here in this moment. Without them, we wouldn't be able to think, to feel, or to speak. There are, he says, no solitary beings. The whole planet is one giant living, breathing cell with all its working parts linked in symbiosis. So to bring in the aspect of community building means simply highlighting what already is available, what already is present within our bodies. So that's one aspect. Another aspect is about doing this work in terms of having a community together and learning about outdoor companionship, co-creating something together in community, and then going out and guiding communities. And this is a real joy for me. And it's related, I guess I would say I draw inspiration from Sharon Krause, who's a political scientist who wrote a book called Eco-Emancipation. And she talks about in that book, non-sovereign agency. And non-sovereign agency is different than sovereign agency in that it includes both our intention, our will, as well as the impact that our intention and will bring to the situation. And so when I think about, I have an intention to do this thing, I have no idea how it's going to be received, what the impact is going to be on another. And so really exploring what it means to do that responsibly, what it means to be accountable based on the different privileges that we hold based on where we are and our upbringing. And it means, so a couple of themes during the community building part of the training program are about what it means to sustain communities that are equitable, that are culturally proficient and responsive, that are trauma sensitive, that are socially just, and that are healing. And so how are we attuning our ears to each other as we also have within nature?
Jeanette, thank you for all that you've offered us today. It is really exciting and touching to get to hear your story and to hear the story of all those you're coming in contact with and to dream about a world that has these types of social justice, eco-justice, equity, sacred compassionate activism, whatever words we know to use that incorporates this into our lives. So I really appreciate you taking the time to be here today.
Thank you so very much for these moments and allowing me to express some of these passions. And I really appreciate you all and all the work that you all are doing as well.
Thank you so much. And if anyone is interested in learning more about this, you'll be able to find links in the show notes to the websites that we've been talking about today. Now is the moment in our podcast where we take a moment to talk about what we are into. So tell me, what are you into today?
I am into Nickel Creek. And this actually, I was into this a couple of weeks ago, but gosh, 20 years ago, maybe Chris and I saw Nickel Creek when we lived in St. Louis and such a fun. They were just a new band on the scene and it was a really fun time. And so they recently came to Madison and we went to see them and it was just so fun. It was fun remembering some of the old songs, and they're just a really fun band to see. And so that's what I'm into is Nickel Creek.
Very fun. It is fun to be into Nickel Creek. I've been into something a little bit different. My son loves to read the Farmer's Almanac, and we've been paying attention to the full moons for the different months. And so the February full moon is actually called the snow moon, which for those of you that live in Wisconsin will know that there's not a whole lot of snow on the ground in February. And so it doesn't feel like a snow moon, but it's just been a beautiful, gorgeous full moon. And it was on the 24th. So it's not quite full, but this morning I was walking early in the morning to my car, and the moon was in the background, and two sandhill cranes were flying, and they flew right through the backdrop of the moon. And I don't know if you've ever heard a crane croon, but it is very distinctive. And so it was like a majestic moment. So I've been into like picturesque moments of the moon. So I hope I painted a wonderful picture for you today.
I think you did paint a wonderful picture. Thank you. I am into something similar with its own twist. Our first grader, he's in an age to just be talking about what he's learning. And sometimes it's just shocking because you go from these moments that are like, oh, to what happened this morning, which was the moon does not glow because rocks can't glow. Do you know how we see the moon? Tell me, how do we see the moon? It reflects because of the light from the sun. And it's just remarkable to hear the word reflect come out of a little body and to think about how rocks don't glow, although I think there are some rocks that glow, but all the same, I get his point. And it's just fun to hear it. It's fun to watch somebody grow. So that is what I'm into. Thank you, everyone, for being with us. We will look forward to being with you again soon.
If you enjoy listening to the podcast, we invite you to stay connected by signing up for our Foundry Spiritual Center newsletter, where you can learn about even more programs and offerings. You'll find a link to subscribe in the show notes, or visit us anytime at foundrysc.com. Thanks again for being with us. We hope you have a great week.